You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here is your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
Well, good Monday morning. I am Glenda Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And this is Ashley Winch from Albuquerque, New Mexico, probably for the last time. And you're listening to Horses in the Morning on Horse Radio Network for Monday, April 27th, episode 3935 by Worm Flooring. Good morning, Horse World.
Well, we have a fun show planned for you today. We're going to be doing Breeds of the Alphabet and talking about the Rocky Mountain Horse with Gay DeRusso. She's kind of like the goddess of gated. I nicknamed her that. I don't know if she appreciated it.
That's a good nickname.
She needs a t-shirt, goddess of gated. Kara Blanchard's going to join us to talk about her amazing Arabian stallion who became USEF National Champion FEI Horse of the Year, plus a fire update near our house, and we learn about the first horse shows in America. Also in our post-show, Auditor Sandra's going to tell us about her new horse, Cyrus. So all of that's coming up on today's show. As you know, Jamie is out. She's on her way back from Kentucky, and judging by the texts I've gotten and the many pictures she posted, I think she's seen about 1,000 listeners there. So she seemed to be busy and having fun all weekend. We'll hear more about that on Wednesday, and thankfully, Ashley could fill in today.
Thank you, Ashley. I'm always happy to come on.
But before we get into all of that, something happened over the weekend.
And sitting in the center, he's an Olympic veteran, a two-time winner of the Cosequin Lexington four-star, winner of the Defender USEF five-star national championship, and the champion of the 2026 Defender Kentucky three-day event presented by Mars Equestrian from the United States, Will Coleman. Will, we know this is something you've thought about and wanted for a long time. Can you possibly put into words all the feelings you have right now?
I probably can't. It is a surreal feeling. It's something that I think we all kind of dream about. Winning a five-star, in my opinion, is, I think, one of the hardest things to do, if not the hardest, in equestrian sports. I think I sort of feel like we all deserve the win. It's such a hard game. It takes so long to really get good enough at it to possibly contend for one of these things. And I have so much respect for the sport, the horses, and the riders that I really feel like it's almost unfair that I'm the only one that gets to take home the win. But
there you go, Will Coleman. We have an American winner. Yay!
I got to say, I all weekend was watching Kentucky content. My husband was pretty mad at me, but I'm like, it's the best weekend all year. Give me some space, okay? And I loved they did this interview where they asked each rider who they think is the most intimidating in the warm-up ring. Glenn, everyone said Will Coleman.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I knew from the get, from those interviews, I said, he's one to watch this weekend. He's hungry for it.
I'm so excited. We watched the whole thing. We watched Cross Country Day. We watched all of Cross Country. And you know me, I never watch it, but this is the one thing I will watch. And we watched all of jumping, actually. And it was terrific. It was, you know, of course, Monica Spencer, you had to feel terrible for her. You know, she was sitting in first. She had a rail between her and the win, and then she dropped three. And what was surprising about that is when we got to her, of the top 10 in the five-star there, a lot of them went clear. It looked like, okay, she's going to be able to do this pretty easily. But once she dropped the first one, then she kind of lost steam and dropped.
I hate when that happens. I hate when that happens because, you know, you lose the confidence, you lose the speed, you lose your focus. You're thinking about the fence behind you just knocked instead of setting up for the next one, and it just snowballs.
And in that atmosphere, which is electric, anybody that's been there in that stadium for show jumping, I thought it was interesting. I want to ask Jamie about this, too. If you looked at the stands, it was not full. For show jumping, I was surprised. They sell that as a separate ticket, and I wonder if that's what hurt them this year with that. I don't know. But I personally, you know, we like going. Jennifer loves going. But you see, watching cross country on the video feed, you see more of it than you see in person, for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Because when you're there, you know, boots on the ground, you either, you know, stake out a few fences and then you move throughout the day, but you don't get to see the whole, it's just impossible, you know?
It is. And, you know, Will actually was happy about one other thing. He took up $130,000 in prize money. That kind of helps. he also became the national champion as a result of that. Two other things I want to make note of, and then we'll talk a lot more about this with Jamie when she comes back on Wednesday. Liz Holiday Sharp was there all weekend. She was watching her horses go that Boyd was riding, and she was just getting to see everybody. She looked smiley and happy. And we, you know, this is her first time back since her accident. Liz was a host of mine for a long time for the eventing show. So I got to know her, and we actually interviewed her. She was one of the first guests we ever had on in 2008. Helene and I had her on, and we were talking about her F1 riding career and event because she was still in F1 at that time. Or driving at that time. So it was so good to see her smiling and happy and just enjoying the event. That was the first thing. Second thing is cross country. They have done a terrific job of making cross country safer. The frangible pins worked. There would have been some serious falls had it been not for those frangible pins and for making all of those jumps safer than they ever have been. So in the end, we ended up with one poor girl with a broken leg, and a couple fell off, but the airbags, and that's the other thing, airbags. There were a couple of those riders that would have broken ribs without airbags. You know, it's just between the airbags and the frangible pins, we saw no horses injured. We saw, you know, we saw a rider with a broken leg, which, by the way, can happen riding at home. You know, we have all done it. We all have broken parts because of horses.
Yep.
So just, after we were done, Jennifer and I looked at each other and said, this is where this sport needs to be right now. And so good job on everybody trying to make it safer. It was proven over the weekend that you can. And also, I think a third part of that, I don't mean to meander about this, but the third part of that is they have made rising up through the ranks more uniform and structured so that when you get to the next level, you're ready for the next level. And I think when Jennifer was competing, that's something we saw all the time. People were moving up when they weren't ready to move up. And that's where they got in trouble. And I think—
Well, because they were just trying to be competitive.
Correct. They just wanted to win. And, you know, they wanted to win at that higher level and they wanted to compete at the higher level because it was more prestigious and all of that stuff. And that doesn't happen so much at the 4 and 5 star level. But I think that does help all the way through the process. So good on them. It was a clean, fun event and it looked like a beautiful day. It wasn't pouring down rain.
I know the weather was great this year because it's so hit or miss.
It is. So I think and we'll hear a lot more about it from Jamie when she comes back. And I'm glad to see so many pictures from listeners. They all seem to have a great time over the weekend. All right, let's do some daily winnies. So we have a couple of auditor birthdays. JMO S, Megan H, Matt H, Kaylee K, and Melissa R. You might not know it, but we had some requests from listeners that we not use their first or last names. So we switched it to that way. So that's why we don't say last names anymore. And thank you for all of your birthday wishes. That was so much fun. Hundreds of them. We really appreciate it. I really appreciate it. And thanks to the donations for Gallup for Life. I did a little fundraiser for Gallup for Life. Lily and her gang over there doing good work for equestrians with cancer. And we raised almost $300. So thank you all for your help there. Actually, while we're gone in May, you're going to hear a couple of episodes that I did with Lily talking about her work with cancer and some of the people that she has helped. One that has overcome cancer and one that's still battling it, but still riding. So we have a couple of very inspirational episodes for you in May that I did with Lily. She's terrific. I love this cause and she does good work for equestrians with cancer. All right, your turn. Let me get that one up.
I don't think I've heard Butters.
You get Butters.
Oh, so cute. Okay, so my daily Winnie is actually going to go to my husband, Zach, but it's not for what you think. Listeners, as you may or may not know, I will be seeing Glenn so soon in Lexington for the AHP annual meeting. And, you know, this has been on the calendar for months and months and months and months. And we're also moving to Montana very soon.
Like during the meeting, right?
Well, isn't it interesting that that's when my husband decided to schedule the movers? So now I get out of moving. No, I mean, I get to miss all of it and just have fun with you instead. So good luck, Zach. Have fun.
His fault. He can handle it.
That's right. I mean, they do all the packing. So it's really more just like being available for questions and overseeing.
Military moves are a little easier than when you're doing it yourself, I think.
Absolutely. Yeah. If I had to move myself every time, I don't think we'd be doing this as often as we do.
Jennifer and I moved 10 times in 15 years ourselves. So, yeah, we know. We know what that's like. But anyway, thanks, Zach, for covering that. What rank is he now in the...
He's a captain still. He'll promote to major next spring, I think.
Well, you know, he's a captain. He should be able to handle a move, right?
Right. I mean, we love him, but he's also a man, Glenn. So. It's not my problem. You know, I'll be gone and we'll be drinking bourbon.
That's right. We're drinking bourbon. We're having fun. So we got a fire update for you. So this is what happened last week. I haven't had a show where I've been able to talk about this since. So Jamie and I recorded Wednesday's show on Tuesday, and we had recorded Friday's show the week before. And it was so funny. On Tuesday morning, I said, you know, Florida's on fire. There's 100 fires around the state. We're so dry. Mm-hmm. And I said, I'm really worried about Gothie Forest, which is, as Ashley knows, about 2 miles
in your backyard.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We ride our horse over to Gothie Forest. So I said, I'm really concerned about that because it's 70,000 acres and it's dry. And that day, after we recorded on the Tuesday, I had to go to the doctor. And on my way home, you come up over a hill that overlooks the whole forest and everything and our house. And I came up over the hill driving home and I saw the smoke. And I went, I just talked about this morning on the show. We just
recorded. Be careful what you manifest, Glenn.
And sure enough, there was a fire had started right across the road from where we enter the park. And that's where it had started. And it was burning pretty good. The smoke was there were a lot of smoke. And it turned out that the wind was blowing away from us and blowing the fire the opposite direction. Thank God for a lot of people, because there were more houses on this side of the fire mm-hmm. than that side, more forest on that side. So there were less people affected, mostly by the smoke. There were some evacuations and things, and they closed a bunch of roads, but it would have hit more. And I think a couple buildings were lost, but I haven't heard about any houses lost. So it pushed it deeper into the forest is what happened. It's still burning, by the way. We're 5 days later. It's up to 2,500 acres. It's a big fire. It's up to 2,500 acres, but it is contained at this point. And what they're basically doing now is burning out the middle parts that haven't been burned.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
So they're actually starting fires in the middle to get that whole section of 2,500 acres burned out. And after that first day, the wind died down, and the wind hasn't blown our direction since, so we haven't even been affected by the smoke. So
good.
It was about 2 miles from us total as the crow flies. If the wind had been blowing our direction, or if we'd picked up any heavy winds in the last 5 days, it would have been much worse.
Right.
But thankfully, that's what happened. Now, it is, you know, the fire risk isn't over because we haven't got any rain. So it's still there. But it was a scary couple days. By the time I got home that day, Jennifer had the trailer hooked up and the emergency supplies ready. I mean, the whole neighborhood did. We're in a question.
Yeah, just ready to go if that
everybody's
order
ready
came
to
down.
Go. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So, in any case, that we're safe. Everything's okay here, but a little bit of a scary couple of days last week. And then we're going to talk to you at the end. I'll talk to you at the end of the show about a show Jennifer and I went to see that is not something you would think would even be a show. And I'll tell you what that was like at the end of the show.
Stop the spring cleaning cycle before it starts. As you head out for your first hauls of the season, remember that every mile with traditional rubber mats is a mile where moisture and waste are trapped against your trailer floor, fueling hidden corrosion. Worm flooring eliminates that risk by bonding a permanent, non-porous rubber seal directly to your subfloor. It's the ultimate spring upgrade. You get a floor that protects your aluminum from rot and a seamless finish that never needs to be pulled out or scrubbed. Worm provides a cushioned, slip-resistant surface that stays cool and stable even during those unpredictable spring rainstorms. Instead of spending your weekend wrestling heavy mats, you can simply hose out the debris and get back to what matters, the ride. Visit Worm Flooring today, wermflooring.com today, because your trailer deserves better than a rubber mat.
It's time for Breeds of the Alphabet. From Arabians to zebras, we take you on an adventure, highlighting a breed for every letter of the alphabet. Can we do it? Stay tuned in 2025 and find out.
Well, our next guest we're very excited to have on to talk about the Rocky Mountain Horse. Gay DeRusso is a nationally recognized horse trainer, clinician, and educator who specializes in gated horses. When I asked Jennifer who we should talk to, she said there's only one person. She's the goddess of gated horses. And that is Gay DeRusso. Hey, Gay.
Hi, good morning.
What an introduction.
I know.
Goddess.
I could have that every day.
You're known as the majestic rider. You need to change that now to the goddess and just, you know, go with that from now on.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you remember your first Rocky Mountain, who it was?
My first? Yes. Yes, because it was actually a client that I jumped on. The hardest part with them is some of them are so stunning, so people just get mesmerized with their looks, you know, their color, because they have that, a lot of them have that dark chocolate color, you know, with that bright flaxen mane, so they're just stunning to look at. So once somebody sees them, they usually recognize most of them in the future.
So that's the first one you got on, because what I found from reading a lot of your stuff is people get these gated, like my wife, for instance, gets these gated horses, and boy, the buttons are different.
Right. Yes. They can do so many things, and so much more affects them versus the regular trotting horse. And so when you don't know them or don't understand them or not sure how to ride them, they can change so quickly and do so many things, you know, and that's the hardest part for people, because you're used to just walk, trot, canter, and then you just got 20 different things and you're like, what the heck is this?
That's what Jennifer went through with James. Let's start with the basics. Average size of a Rocky Mountain?
The average size, some of them are smaller now. So I would say between like 14 and 15.2. There are some large ones, but not a ton of them, you know, that are 16 hands. I haven't seen a 17 hand one, but I'm sure there's one out there somewhere.
And did they start in the Rocky Mountains?
No, they actually started in, well, it gets very confusing because one of the very first horses, like the sire started it, that they don't even know the name because it was passed through like through generations, but just by word of mouth. That horse was from the Rocky Mountains. They brought him in to Kentucky, and then from there they bred it to mares in like the Appalachian Mountains. So it gets a little confusing, and again, it's all word of mouth, but it's one of the ones that's called the Rocky Mountain, and everybody's like, it's not really from the Rocky Mountains, where like the Tennessee Walking Horse is from Tennessee. So it does get a little confusing.
What were they breeding to make one in the beginning? Did they know?
They bred them, you know, the people that owned these horses, they bred them just mostly as work or utility horses. So these weren't show horses. These weren't like people who had lots of money, like the ones that owned like thoroughbreds and show horses and stuff. These horses were bred to work. So they were more like plowing the fields, herding the cows, taking people over the mountains to get to town and things of that nature. And then again, most of it, like lots of people hadn't heard of the Rocky Mountain because they were like in a place, you know, farther away from everybody else. So it was like a hidden gem to those people.
Mm. And was this in the early 1900s or?
Yeah. So they supposedly started back like in the late 1800s, but, you know, they became more popular in the 1900s. And then I believe the associations didn't start, like the Rocky Mountain Horse Association registry didn't start till like the 1980s.
Okay.
And I think they did that to keep, you know, to keep them and make sure that they were bred well and, you know, that they didn't fade out of us, you know, didn't fade away.
I assume because they were used for long distance horses, they have good feet in general?
Yeah. So most people keep them barefoot. You know, some people that are showing have shoes on, but most of the trail people have them barefoot. They might occasionally have to put boots on, but they're bred very hardy. So they do have really good feet for most of them.
So their color is one of the more unique things. And you talk about people breeding them because they didn't have a ton of money. Like they were just trying to get a workhorse. How did the color aspect of this come into play? Because they're so unique.
Yeah, it was one of the first, you know, one of the first ones, you know, that they found that gated and was smooth and had lots of stamina. So it goes back to a horse called Old Toby was the stallion, and a guy named Sam Tuttle owned him. And that horse, I believe, lived until he was like 37, like a long life, and bred up into his 30s. So he supposedly had the chocolate coloring and the flaxen mane, or it came out after him. And then they kept breeding to that. So, and then they traced the coloring back to something called the silver gene or silver dapple gene. And now they test for it in some of the horses because it's good and bad. It gives them the great color, but some of them, if they get that double gene, they can have eye problems. And so, like everything, I think there's always good to bad and everything. So they got to be a little bit careful with their breeding. And it's always good if you have a Rocky to check their eyes, just so you know how to handle things in the future. But that it wasn't like they specifically bred a horse with that flaxen mane. It's like they got it and then they promoted it. If that makes
sense. Yeah, it does. And interesting, you talk about the eye problems, because when you breed for color in Appaloosas, they have the same type of situation. So it must be, just don't breed for color, people. But sometimes you can't help it.
Jamie's been breeding for color for years and never got the one she wanted. So
I didn't breed for color. I bred despite what I wanted. Okay.
You're like, it's supposed to be a buckskin. I don't get why it's black.
Exactly.
I just wanted a black horse and now I have a buckskin. So that's weird that you just did that.
That is weird.
So the other thing I've noticed about Rocky Mountain horses is that you talk about being gated, but they're like not a normal gait. I remember seeing one and I'm like, I don't even know what its feet are doing right now. Like, what is that?
Yeah. So they do something called a saddle gait. And because they don't have a big stride, their feet move kind of quick. And so it's hard for some people to see that it's actually a true four-beat gait, but you can hear it, you know, if they're on the road, you can hear when they're doing it. And lots of different horses can do the gated horses can do the saddle gait, but it looks different when the different breeds do it. So they have a saddle gait. And then like in the show ring, you might hear show pleasure gait or trail gait or something. That's the same gait, it's just more like engagement and higher knee action and more collection. So it gets confusing, but that's what it basically is. And then other people will say like it's a four beat ambling gait, and then people get confused. I'm like, yeah, that's a saddle gait. It's the same thing. So because there's so many terms. Yeah. But ambling means lateral. So that, you know, versus a trot. So if they were just many years ago, I'm sure if they were describing, you know, a horse compared to the trotting horse, they're like, we like the ambling horse because those are smooth in the saddle and those trotty ones are bouncy. So it kind of covered everything.
Absolutely. I mean, it does do everything. When I first saw my first Rocky Mountain horse, I was 18. I just moved to Lexington, Kentucky, and I grew up showing hunter jumpers. So I moved to go to school at the Kentucky Horse Park, and they have their breeds of the, you know, the breeds barn. And right. They brought out one of the Rocky Mountains, and I was like, oh my God, they're riding a horse with like four broken legs. I was like, something is dislocated. Turns out that's how they move, and people love it.
Yes, but in the beginning, you're just like, what are they doing?
You know? Right? I mean, I was like, I grew up around hunter jumpers. I was like, this is not a thing. Like, this is not a horse.
No, and it freaks some of the trot. Like, if trotting horses haven't heard them before, it can freak them out if a gated horse is coming up behind them. They all get used to it because people get freaked out. I'm like, just relax. In like 10 rides, your horse will be used to that gated horse. It'll be fine. But because it sounds like they're running because their feet are moving so fast. you know, compared to the trotting with the suspension, you get that space. But here you just hear pucka 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 down the road. So
they, you know, they sound similar. I think, you know, I think the Pasofino is, you know, to the one extreme, yes, but they sound similar to that. Is that the same game?
Yes. Yeah. So okay, they call it different names, and that's why it gets so confusing, you know, but it is the same lateral gait. And then even the running walk with the walking horse, that's still a lateral gait, except they have more overstride and they get that head shake. And they can saddle gait too, but it looks totally different than the other ones.
This is, you're right. It is so confusing. Yeah. I can see why you're so busy, because this is so confusing.
I'm just trying to clear up the confusion of the world.
You talk about people getting them because they're beginner safe and because they, yes, have a calm disposition. But what are the biggest mistakes you see beginners make when they get a gaited horse for the first time? And I can throw my, and my wife would throw herself into that bucket after having years of experience with very challenging horses. This one has proved, you know, very challenging for her.
It can be, because they're so calm. And I think Rockies, out of all the gated breeds that I've seen, and I've seen a lot, you know, if it's bred well, they are. They're very calm and very accepting, and not much bothers them. And the hardest part with that is, because they're like that, all the trainers and people just skip steps. And they're just like, you know, they're fine. You can get on it. It can steer. But that's pretty much all they taught it. You know, when we have Arabs and thoroughbreds, we got to train them really well, because they'll try to kill us.
Right.
So with these horses, because they're not trying to murder people every day, they lack a lot of basic training. And because the people buying them are beginners, they think they're trained because they don't know any better, but they really don't know a lot. And then you put the horse that doesn't know anything with the person that doesn't know anything, and you know, it just doesn't go as well. So hopefully that'll change over time, that they're, you know, better trained and have more foundation on them before those people buy them.
It's interesting.
I'm looking through them on Dream Horse, just like looking at how, because I wanted to get an idea of how much they cost. And I mean, obviously different ages, different, you know, training levels, but I'm looking at them from 5,000 to 20,000 to private treaty on some of them. So it is definitely all over the place.
Yeah, they've gone way up there. You know, some is that calm temperament. The other one, a lot of people like that shorter stride. It's very sure-footed for like mountain climbing and stuff. And then, of course, the beauty of them. And then a lot of people like that gait. You know, it doesn't bother their back if they're doing it correctly. You know, there's not a whole bunch of movement in that saddle. So I think all of that adds up to it. And then some of them also can still trot when they're loose. So, you know, somebody wants them to trot under saddle, they can still get that out of them, where, you know, some gated horses will only gait and not trot.
Well, looking here too, a lot of the ones that are on the lower end are like not chocolate. Like, so I'm pretty sure y'all are just making this up. You're just making up the breed, not registered. Here you go. Here's one super cheap. He's a Bayrone Rocky Mountain.
Right.
Is that a thing? Yes. Do they come out, yes, in other colors?
They did. So, you know, in the beginning, it was just chocolate with the flaxen mane, or they came out with chocolate and that ombre mane, or just, you know, differences of that. But now they have them that, and they're registering. I've seen roans, you know, bay roans. I've seen blue roans. I've seen, you know, what they call a silver buckskin. So there are different colors out there now, which also confuses people. You know, before with the registry, it was a dark color and it couldn't have too much white on it. But it, you know, I've seen these horses come through my place, so I know they're registering them, you know, because I looked at all the papers, but it has changed.
So I wanted to end with this question, and I get this is directly from my wife too. When she went out looking for a gated horse, she said, and again, she's been doing horses for 40 years and competitive for 40 years. And she said, I feel like I'm a beginner. I don't know what I'm looking at.
Yeah.
I don't know what to look for. So what do you recommend people do if they're going out to get their first gated horse for whatever reason? What do you recommend they do?
Daylight dollar short, Glenn, but go ahead.
I always try to tell people to, you know, if you can, to have a gated trainer help you. Because they know, you know, a lot about the horse, but they can also see how you ride to make sure it's a match. I think that makes a huge difference. There's lots of people who don't have anybody to help them. And like online, I help people do like pre-purchase, like they send me videos and I evaluate it. And then I ask them, like, send me videos of you so I can see if this would be a match and how much training you have. But I think that's usually the most successful one. Some people are just lucky and just find the right one. But otherwise, you know, all the beginners or newbies just go for color and it looks pretty and they see one video of it going down the road, so they think it's fine. And, you know, it's expensive because of all that coloring and stuff, so they end up buying a $20,000 horse or more, and then it arrives and doesn't know anything, and the person doesn't know anything. And most other fields, if you bought a $20,000 horse, it would have some training on it.
Yeah. Wouldn't know how to steer.
Yes, you just bought the breed and the color. Congratulations.
You know, I would totally agree from personal experience that if you're getting in the gated for the first time, get help. Because this is, you know, it's not anything like, but our horse, he's a Kentucky Mountain horse. And by the way, I think they make these breeds up. I just do.
Yeah, but they're pretty similar. It's the same gates. And
yeah. And he's sweet as pie, but boy, is he challenging, you know? So he's just the sweetest horse. I love him, but I don't have to ride him. So
right. Yeah.
So but I love the idea that you offer that service. Where can people find you to do that?
On my website, it's majesticrider.com. Yeah, and I try to post a lot of stuff to help people because it is so confusing out there, you know, and sometimes you just don't know who to believe. Well, especially when they're selling the horse. They're like, oh, it's easy to gate. I'm like, yeah, until it leaves the property because they're riding it.
So is themajesticrider.com or majesticrider.com?
It's just majesticrider.com. Okay.
Very good. I highly recommend any listener. Gay comes highly, highly recommended from everybody that I've talked to and know. And you know what? If Mary Kitzmiller had you on the show, then you are approved. There's a stamp of approval there. So
I'm certified.
Yeah, you're certified, Mary. So, thank you, Gay. I appreciate you joining us today. This has been good on the gated front, not just Rocky Mountain, but for gated in general. I appreciate the instruction there.
Well, thanks for covering them. It's always nice to share about them.
Well, clarify, Larvicide is more than just a fly control product. It's the first step towards improving horse comfort and keeping nuisance flies out of your stables. This feed additive uses an active ingredient that passes through the digestive system of horses and is expelled in the manure, where it stops flies in their larval stage. By using Clarify Larvicide as part of an integrated pest management program with Starbar products, you'll get more support, more expertise, and more control. Visit centralflycontrol.com. That's centralflycontrol.com to learn more or contact your local feed dealer today. Our next guest is a USDF gold, silver, and bronze medalist. She teaches a gentler, more mindful approach to horsemanship that prioritizes the emotional well-being of both the human and the horse. But today, we're going to talk to her about one particular horse. His name is Steel. He's an amazing story that ended in numerous championships and awards, including the USEF National Champion FEI Horse of the Year in 2017. Kara Blanchard, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, Kara, you're not too far from me here in Ocala, right?
No, I am in the Eustace Mountdora area, just south of you.
Oh, great. And you have a training facility there?
I do. I pretty much just teach virtually these days. And so I teach virtual dressage, and I have a yoga program for equestrians that is focused on nervous system regulation, somatic healing, and life coaching. So I pretty much just do virtual these days.
Well, good. I mean, it works. Why not?
But, you know, I have the horses here, of course, my horses.
Well, and I want to talk about Steel in particular, because when I saw his story, I just thought it was amazing. How did you get Steel, and when did you get Steel?
Oh, boy. He's a long story. So he came to me as a training horse for a client in early January. I mean, this was like a New Year's Day sort of thing. 2007. He was, it was January, obviously, of his five-year-old year. And it was kind of a happenstance thing. My clients had taken him to another trainer that, you know, they just pulled him off the trailer. Hey, can you train this horse? And she was like, no, I don't want another stallion in my barn, but call Kara. And so I actually went to their place to visit him and immediately fell in love, which of course was like a big problem.
Yeah. It's everybody's big problem.
Right. I had vowed to myself when I started my business in 2005 that I would never fall in love with a client horse. And I failed.
So, I think we've all failed at that over the years.
So he was with me for about 3 years. I had a lot of retraining to do. He had done, you know, the Arabian main ring hunter type stuff and a lot of halter stuff as a baby. And he didn't understand the concept of going forward to the bridle. And he was very spooky and nervous just from mostly the halter ring type of stuff. You know, they get him snorty and flip their tails up over their back and get them all goofy. So.
I've had hackneys. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. So it's not exactly the mindset we want for our dressage horses. So it was, he was a fun, rewarding project. And then the economy tanked and they sold these clients had, I don't even know, 25 or 30 horses. And they started selling off horses and giving horses away and they pulled him out of training. And so I was in touch with them over the course of about 2 years and they kept offering me, hey, you want to buy them for this much? Do you want to buy them for that much? And I was like, well, yeah, but it just didn't make sense for me because, you know, at the time I was in my early 20s and I already had 8 of my own horses. You know, what did I need another horse for, you know? And so I think they just got to a point where they were desperate and they were afraid of what was going to happen to their horses because they were selling their property and they weren't going to board. And so the owner called me coincidentally on my 27th birthday. And he said, hey, do you have any interest in steel? And I said, well, I always have interest in steel. What do you mean? He said, well, you love him and he loves you and we just want him to be yours.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, I didn't even know it was my birthday. That was the craziest thing. And I happened to be out with my mom, and I was like, I got to call you back. Like, my heart was just pounding. I was like, oh, my gosh, what am I going to do? I have 8 horses and 8 stalls, and I don't have any place to put him right now. You know, it's just like my head was spinning. And we ended up building another stall into our barn.
Of course.
It's now a chicken coop, of course.
Steel's been kicked out. It's a chicken coop.
Well, he now has a real stall, not the stall on the back of the barn. That was part of like the patio. But yeah, he came to me 3 weeks later, once we got the stall built. And I basically started him over from scratch because he'd been standing in a pasture for almost 2 years. And we just kind of got right to work. And
okay, so I have to ask you about that Arabian stallion, right? Okay, not something you normally think about for high level dressage. What made you think he'd be good at it?
I don't know. he was halter bred. He is halter bred. He's bred to stand still and look pretty. And I don't know. There was just never a doubt in my mind. This horse is going to be a Grand Prix horse, and it was just like this is what we're doing. And so we did. And there were some crazy times. Teaching him flying changes was tricky because he had had some injuries from his halter showing days. So, you know, there's a lot of chiropractic and bodywork and stuff involved. But once he figured out flying changes, we were like home free.
So did you think that was the light bulb moment right there? For him?
For him, yeah, definitely. He picked up most things pretty easily. The one tempi changes were a little bit tricky. We got in a place where he could do 4, and then we were just kind of stuck there doing 4 for a while. And then we got to 5, and then it was just like, okay, no problem. But, you know, he enjoys the work. He enjoys our time together. There was never a doubt in my mind that he wasn't going to make it. And the icing on top is that it's a rare day when he acts like a stallion. And when he acts like a stallion, I call him the fairy princess.
Point did you mm-hmm. realize you were going to have a, you know, national champion on your hands? Was there a light bulb moment for you where you went, okay, this horse has something? And let me ask this first. Was there ever a point where the judges you think were unfair because he was an Arab?
Yes.
I figured if you hadn't answered yes to that, I would have been shocked.
Yeah.
Yes. So the year that he went USCF Horse of the Year in FEI, I did all of that at Arabian shows, because that's kind of the way that program works, is it's all breed
right
related, even though it's through USCF. So it kind of intentionally started chasing points that year. It was like, well, we're so close, I might as well keep going. So yeah, I was determined that year. He was only a few points away, and there was another show that I had planned on for that year anyway. And I talked to my coach about it. I said, do you think he can handle doing two FEI rides in a day if I need to for these points? And he was like, yeah, sure, go do it. He's fit. And he did it, and he was great, and his scores were great. And we showed Pre-St. George and Intermediate One 2 days in a row at that show.
Wow.
Yeah, and he handled it like a champ.
Well, he's an Arabian. I mean, they're meant, you know, they're meant to go for a long time. So
yeah, was
very good point.
I did short warm-ups, and the weather was perfect for it, because it was like, you know, Thanksgiving week. So it was fantastic. And then for some reason, I decided that when I started showing him Grand Prix, I got my last score for Grand Prix, his first time showing Grand Prix. And for some reason, I decided I was going to do that at an open breed show. And there was only one other horse in the class, and I had a pretty clean ride, and the other horse did not. So there were actually people that came to me and said, hey, you should have won that class. But the other horse was a warm blood.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I didn't watch. I don't watch my competitors because it you know, it makes me nervous.
Well, yeah. So, and what's the point, right? You're there with your horse to focus on your ride.
Right. And I was just, I was determined to get the score that I needed that ride for some reason. It wasn't like, you know, I couldn't go do it again. And it was his first time, but he got the score, and I can't complain, you know.
Well, and he is absolutely stunning horse. I mean, his coloring is amazing. He's gray, but he's got a tannish tint to him, doesn't he?
It's all the
from the pictures.
He's got, it's interesting because when he was born bay, and when I met him, he had black points. His legs were black, his mane and tail were black. And as he's gotten older, it's like he's going back to bay.
Yeah, it's
or
weird.
Or chestnut, maybe. Like he's very flea bitten now, and his mane and tail are white. So yeah, it's all flea bites.
And he has the dishy Arab face too, which I absolutely love, by the way. So, but he does have that face. I mean, you can tell he's an Arab when you see him.
So, well, he doesn't have that. Luckily, he doesn't have that kind of, you know, freakish dishy nose that
no, it's just
breathing at all.
It's
anything.
Just enough.
Yeah, just enough.
It's the perfect amount.
Yeah,
I can't complain.
No, he's very pretty. This is amazing. I love asking this question. What surprised you the most about this horse?
I think, you know, it's hard to say because I've had him for almost 20 years, and he's been in my life for 20 years. I think that what's surprising is his temperament, because most people don't know he's a stallion. He doesn't act like a stallion. You know, I don't fear my small children being anywhere near him. And what I think is what's amazing for me is at 24 years old, I made the decision to retire him because he didn't owe me anything else. And I enjoy, you know, giving him the honor of letting him just be a horse. But I know that if I hopped on him this afternoon, he would be excited and ready to go. You know, he's just, sure, whatever you want to do. I'm game. Let's go. Yeah, you know, he's that kind of horse.
And little did you know when you got this horse in training as a four-year-old.
Yeah, I know.
That we would be talking wild. 20 years later, and you would have all these championships and everything under your belt, and probably your horse of a lifetime right there.
He's been amazing. He definitely saved my life. The story that I don't really tell often is that he was not my first love. My first love was a half Arab, half saddlebred named Air Jordan. And he was black, of course. And he was 16'3" hands tall. big, huge horse, and I'm not a big person at all. I'm 5'4" and 100 pounds soaking wet most days. And Jordan was the horse that raised me. And 100 days after Steel became mine, I lost Jordan to complications after colic surgery. And I was really blessed at that time to have some clients that would call me and leave voicemails or text me and say, hey, you better get up and ride that horse today. Go ride that horse. You better be on that stallion today. They kept me going. And you know, it took them a few weeks to like realize they didn't have to call me anymore. But, you know, he carried me through the greatest loss of my life.
He was meant to be. Talk about meant to be, right?
Became the equine love of my life.
Well, congratulations on all of your achievements with Steel. It's okay. I'm going to use that picture from the World Equestrian Center in the show notes.
Sure. I can send you others too, if you'd like, whatever you want.
Yeah, I think that one would be terrific. And it's just, you know, it's just a cool picture. That's what caught our attention. So here we are. Well, thank you, Kara. Where can people reach you and find out what you do?
KaraBlanchard.com.
And that, and I'll also put a link into your Facebook page as well, because Kara does a lot more other stuff. She mentioned at the beginning of the show, you can check it all out on her website's really good, and also on her Facebook page if you'd like to contact her. And as she said, she does mostly virtual stuff, so it doesn't matter where they are in the country or the world, right?
Exactly. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Kara.
For first-time horse owners and new riders just starting out, finding the information and support you need can be challenging. That's why Equine Network has partnered with Sentinel Feed to bring you My New Horse, a place where equestrians just getting into horse ownership or riding will find the resources and community they need at precisely their stage of the equine journey. From important horsekeeping information and how-to videos to social media communities and more, My New Horse is your one-stop shop for riders of all levels and disciplines who are eager to find easy-to-understand horse care information and guidance. Start your horse ownership journey today. Visit mynewhorse.com.
Well, we're going to be hearing that trumpet this weekend coming up. We'll be talking more about the Kentucky Derby later in the week. We're going to have our annual Derby trivia as well on Friday. So look forward to that. Well, it is time for This Day in Equine History. This week in 1821 is associated with some of the earliest recorded organized trotting races in northeastern United States, laying groundwork for what would become harness racing later on. This eventually led to the rise of breeds like the Standardbred. The Harlem Lane races were one of the most famous early races. Wealthy horse owners raced their trotters along the public road on the west side of Manhattan.
Oh, wow.
So they went back in those days in Philadelphia and Manhattan, Boston. They would pick the longest, straightest road, and that's where they would hold these races. They would shut down the street, and they would race them right through town.
Like all of New York City is just like, got to go around.
So they were often high stakes, and they that's what popularized racing as a sport, because they used to do riding races that way too. But people could just watch. They could walk down.
Right, and it's in the middle of friggin' New York City, so
and they have,
enjoy.
And this is where the bookies came to be, because they still used the bookie system in England. Of course, we were taking everything from England, right?
Right.
So they did bookies in those days, and every street corner had a bookie. So you would place your bets on the races and watch them as they came by. So that's how it started. Kind of fascinating. Watching Kentucky over the weekend made me ask, what were the first horse shows in the United States? You know, we talk about Devon in Pennsylvania as being the oldest continuously run horse show in the world, but it wasn't the first in the United States. Early in the 1800s, the earliest horse shows were not fancy competitions. They were livestock expositions at agricultural fairs.
So like your state fair.
State fair. And Massachusetts and New York were known for having the biggest state fairs, agriculture fairs. And you showed for best farm horse, pulling ability, conformation, things like that. And that's where you see horse pulls today, where they pull for weight. Mm-hmm, that started way back when, or in the 1800s, because these were all plow working horses, right? So they were used to pulling for weight. That's what they did for a living. And that's where those started. And You know, I don't know a lot. They get a lot of crap here, but Jennifer and I used to love to watch the pulling horses because we lived in Pennsylvania and there were pulling horse shows everywhere.
Yeah. So
local farms had them. We used to go all the time to watch the pulling horses. And of course, it was
it's amazing.
Horses.
I remember a couple of years ago, we interviewed on this show on Horses in the Morning, a team of like 12 or 20 in Canada that pulled, like they were world record holders. And it was incredible to talk to them.
And of course, I always own Percherons, so I was rooting for the Percherons, and they never
won.
Well,
of course.
They never won. So the first major structured horse show was in 1853. It was called the American Institute Fair. It was held in New York City, and it was the first one to feature formal judging of horses in classes that included draft horses, carriage horses, and light saddle horses. And it was this event that started to resemble a modern horse show with categories and ribbons. So it was the first one they consider like horse shows as of today, where you win, you pay. I don't think they had to pay hundreds of dollars to get in back then.
No, I'm sure they did.
It's cheaper to enter back then, but as the first one to give ribbons out. So that also started in New York City.
Wow, how cool.
So there you go. That's your
1853. My gosh.
And the Devon show started in the late 1890s. So that's when and if you ever get a chance to go to Devon in Pennsylvania and see that show, it feels like you've gone back in time.
It is spectacular.
Cool, you've been there?
It's beautiful. I have, yeah.
It is such a cool show. It's just nothing like it. There's nothing like that show. In this country, anyway. There's just nothing like it. All right, so we're going to end the show here. But auditors, hang on. We have Sandy Holt coming on. She's an auditor, and she got a new horse, but she also does some fascinating things. She actually works for a living as a horse appraiser, and I don't think we've ever had one of those on the show. So we're going to ask her about that, too, and how all that works. But first, a couple days after the fire, we decided it was safe to leave because I had bought Jennifer tickets for Valentine's Day for something. And you're going to go, what? She loves Alton Brown, who's was the chef on Food Network.
Yes. Good Eats. He's like the science-y chef.
The Good Eats guy. And yes. Jennifer's into science-y stuff. So she loved Alton Brown and Good Eats. And he was also the MC on Iron Chef America.
That's right. Yep.
So he's been on the Food Network for years. He has his own show now on YouTube. So she loves Alton Brown, and he has done a road show where he does stage performances for years. And I had no idea what he did, but she's always wanted to see it. And there was one, closest he was coming was Jacksonville, which is a couple hours from here. So I bought that for her for Valentine's Day. And then, of course, we get a fire the day before.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. But we determined, okay, we were going to be safe, and it wasn't coming our direction. We were okay. So we left, and we went to Jacksonville overnight. Stayed at a beautiful hotel right on the waterfront. Actually, Jacksonville's kind of pretty. We met a friend of mine for dinner that night, Jonathan. He runs a podcast that I know some of you listen to called Trivial Warfare. It's one of the biggest trivia podcasts. He's been doing it 10 years.
Wow.
And he actually, because of that trivia podcast, is now in the Trivia Hall of Fame. There is a Trivia Hall of Fame, believe it or not. I think it's in Vegas, actually. Makes sense. So he's in the Trivia Hall of Fame, and I'm going to do a one-on-one interview with him because he's a fascinating dude, and it's so much fun. We actually... Was it Jamie and I? I forget who. Two of us competed against him on his show years ago. And we actually beat him. I don't know how. He didn't know any of the horse questions, and they threw in some of those. So I think we were good.
So but it was anyway. Rigged, is what you're saying?
Yeah. So anyway, we had dinner with him. But then we went to see Alton Brown. And I got to tell you, we didn't know what to expect. I had no idea. I didn't look up ahead of time to see what he does in a stage show. He was like a stand-up comedian. It was hilarious. Our faces hurt from laughing all night.
Oh, I love that.
Oh, he was so good and so natural. And he was, you know, I talk about improv all the time because I'm an improv performer. He was so good at improv. He got the audience involved in a couple of the skits he did on stage. And they did involve cooking, but not in the way you would think. This was not a boring cooking show, let me tell you.
Yeah.
He did the most bizarre science things. And he got people on stage, and he was so good at improvising with them. And it was packed. And this was the rowdiest audience I've ever seen at any show.
That's hysterical.
We were taken aback by that. But obviously, that's the way his audiences are, because he would react. People would just scream things out in the middle. They would just yell things out, and he would have a comeback for every single one of them.
Oh, how fun is that?
Oh, it was. We were taken aback. I mean, we used to have a little bit of that when I did shows. people would do that. And you'd play
you have to be really careful with audience engagement because it can turn on you in the split second.
Well, there were a few that going up and down the aisles were not walking well when they arrived. You know what? It was funny is I noticed more women that were walking backwards and sideways than men. There were some very drunk women when they arrived, and they were a couple of the ones yelling out. And but then again, you know, he's big also. His show was big on cocktails. He's a big cocktail guy. I mean, he did this very funny cocktail when we were there. So I think this is the way his shows are. You know, he knows that's his audience. But it was
good on him.
It was worth the drive. It was worth an overnight stay. It was just a fun show. If you're into cooking and like Alton at all, go see one of his shows. He claims this is the last year, but he said that last year too. So he's got to be in his late 60s now. But he was hilarious. Very good show. Well done. Well produced. And he was like a stand-up comedian.
That's so cool. Years ago, Zach and I got to catch Anthony Bourdain
doing
a similar kind of stand-up thing. And we were laughing all night long. And it was just so cool to kind of like peek behind the curtain and get to know these guys who, you know, we spend hours watching on TV.
There's actually, after we got home, Jennifer found a video on YouTube where it actually went through the creation of this show. And when you watched it, you thought, yeah, I know there's some planning behind it and everything, but you don't realize how much planning went in to make this look natural.
Mm-hmm. You know, which is the mark of a good showman.
You know, it's funny because people ask me sometimes how long it takes to prepare for this show. I'm about 3 hours in the morning getting everything together. And I realize some of it sounds spontaneous for this show, but Ashley will tell you there's complete show notes for this. It's not scripted, but we know exactly what's going to happen in what order, what we're going to talk about, and all that takes prep time.
Well, and then, you know, you come up with ideas as you work through it, and then you have, you know, it's you have to have a baseline.
Yep, that's right. That's right. Well, anyway, there you go. Go see Alton Brown. I think I want some points for it being her Valentine's gift.
So. I think so too.
Hang on, auditors for the post show. Jamie will be back on Wednesday,
probably.
I'm trying to think of what tomorrow is. Is tomorrow dark? I don't remember. Let me look. Hold on, everybody. See, this is the unplanned part. Nope, tomorrow we have Solange with her riding episode.
Oh my gosh, and I had so much fun hanging out with her at Equine Affair.
Yes. Oh, did you? You got to see her?
Yes.
You got on an equisizer, I see, too.
I did. She gave me a stable riding thing, and we hung out. I had drinks with her and her team. I adore Solange.
Well, you'll get to hear her tomorrow, and we'll be back here on Wednesday. Get your weird
I can't wait to see you soon in Lexington.
Yes, a couple weeks.
Woohoo!